Minister of the Chisago County Housing and Redevelopment Authority and Economic Development Authority. And I want to share with you some of the challenges that we're experiencing, as Representative Kalin mentioned. Our greatest challenge in terms of economic development right now is our competition from Wisconsin. And we are finding out on a regular basis that our businesses are being bombarded with solicitations from Wisconsin. As you see from the letter from the governor of Wisconsin here, the letter indicates, you know, if you move your business across the river, which is literally 1,000 feet, you can save up to 50% on your industrial and commercial property taxes. You can save 40% on your workers' comp rates. You can save 20% on your corporate income taxes. And by the way, we'll give you free land, and our sales tax is lower, and go on and on. And so our concern is that we've lost, as Representative Kalin said, 17 businesses already to the state of Wisconsin. 21 businesses occupy the industrial park in the Osceola Industrial Park. 17 of them are from Minnesota. And we're continuing to fight that border battle. And our first goal is to keep what we have. And we'd sure like to be able to attract new businesses into Taylor Falls and into Chisago County. But when we have the opportunity to show them what we've got, they also look across the river and say, what's available on the Wisconsin side? And so the land is available, the taxes are lower. It's really a difficult challenge for us because we're trying to promote industrial commercial taxes in our county, and we're just having a tough battle with Wisconsin. And as we've seen over the past year or so here, we've lost 30,000 jobs in Minnesota. We can't afford to lose anymore. And so we need to keep what we have. And so what we're asking for consideration is to look at the policy. Is it acceptable for us to be able to enter the Border Cities Development Zone, the same program that's available on the western side of the state? Can we access some of those resources and offer some incentives to grow and attract companies into our city of Taylor Falls? So with that, I thank you and
let them remember.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Eng. I have a couple of questions. One is you being in charge or in the administration of a city, a border town, on our eastern border, how is Wisconsin able to do this? How are they able to have lower taxes? How are they able to provide better incentives to businesses than this great state that we've been told is the best place to have a business? How is Wisconsin able to do that?
Mr. Eng.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, what we see is the difference is the residential property taxes in Wisconsin are significantly higher than they are in Minnesota. And on the opposite side, the businesses get a nice break. And so what we see happening is the folks that live in Minnesota take advantage of the cheaper residential property taxes and drive across the border to work in Wisconsin. And so,
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that might be the case, and I know that the residential taxes are higher, but I also know that in the area that you're talking about, let's just take, is it Deer Lake? Deer Lake is, in that 1,000 feet that Representative Kalin described, actually you can walk across the bridge, but you have to go up the hill and down just a ways. It's probably about 3 miles before you hit all the retail. And Deer Lake is not too far past that.
Representative Kalin, you wish to respond?
Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, just wanted to make sure we have the geography right. You literally can walk about 1,000 feet and hit the retail, the front portion of the retail section of St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. It's about 10 miles. I'm looking at the mayor, Mike Buchheit, about 10 miles to Deer Lake in the residential area. You can set up business in St. Croix Falls and take advantage of the great quality of life that we have over in Minnesota, in Taylor Falls and around.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I'm not quibbling on distance. I wasn't talking about Deer Lake being right there. I realize that's past it, but you got to go up the hill and you hit all the, you do. I mean, I got to drive down. I'll quibble with you outside of the hearing. The point being that many of those properties on a lake like Deer Lake are owned by Minnesotans. So, I mean, Minnesotans are paying those property taxes over there, and our businesses are also going over there. The next question is, if this is good for the border towns, wouldn't it be better just to cut the overall corporate tax rate and start to reduce some of the regulations, the requirements that we have in this state, statewide? Because if it's good for business on the border, wouldn't it be good for business across Minnesota?
Mr. Eng, you wish to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, if I could, Representative Emmer, I've been doing economic development for 16 years, seven of which I've been in Chautauqua County. And we meet with businesses on a regular basis, and to be honest, I've never had a business say to me, we're going to leave Minnesota because the corporate income taxes are too high. So it has not been a factor. The property taxes, on the other hand, are an issue. And especially because there's a huge difference, and I think that also in your handout is a comparison of Sacred Falls and Taylor's Falls that one of our businesses put together for us. And just as a comparison, we have a business that was lost to fire in Taylor's Falls back in 2001, I believe. That site is still sitting empty. We call it the hole. Nobody's ever been able to redevelop that site because, again, you can move your business 1,000 feet across the river and save a considerable amount on property taxes. We're working right now. We've got the opportunity to buy a site from MnDOT that is a garage, a maintenance garage, where they store two salt trucks, sanding trucks. The building needs significant work, and in order for them to invest in that building and renovate that building, it's going to take a lot of money. And so what we're doing is working out a deal with them where we're going to turn that site over to the city. The city will acquire that site, build a new building for MnDOT, and hopefully redevelop that site right on Main Street that takes up a whole city block and have the opportunity to turn that into a mixed-use development of some sort. We cannot do that with the current property tax situation in Wisconsin. We just can't compete with that. So in order for us to attract the development into that site that will be vacant in the next year or so here, we've got to do something different.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Ng. I just want to tell you, I think we have a great town, and we should do whatever we can to make sure that you can attract as many businesses as possible and jobs. I note from the materials that we got this morning that we don't have a list of those 17 companies. Do you have a list of those companies?
I'm going to have it at my office, and I will get to that list.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, only question I have is, what is the purview of the committee with respect to the terms of this bill?
Well,
does it include economic development?
It does not actually include economic development or taxes, but it's come up from the division. I'll allow some flexibility here, but the discussion, if this bill is going to taxes, there will be an extensive discussion on the tax issue relating to this bill. Representative Gutwall. No. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the latitude. Representative Kalin, the bill asks for a $100,000 reduction in state taxes. What commitment is the city of Taylor Falls going to make as their share of maintaining businesses in the community?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Biskin. I can take a shot at it, and then we'll look at Mayor Mike and see if he has anything to correct me on what I say. But over the last half decade, the mayor and the council have made a significant effort to reduce the high tax rates in Taylor's Falls because they have actually no industrial property and just commercial property. They've made investments in infrastructure, made investments in the Riverwalk connecting the Interstate State Park and Bent Street. We would know it as Main Street, but technically Bent Street on Taylor's Falls, the main commercial strip. They've made significant efforts on redevelopment, I'll get you a copy of the comprehensive plan that they've been working on for several years that I think has in terms of the state and local government operations component of this committee, I think has been quite impressive. The city has made great strides in working to position themselves to be able to attract businesses. The reality is just that, as you can see on the tax comparison handout, it just doesn't pencil out when you have a high-value community competing with a low-cost community across the river. And so what we're asking this committee to do is just recognize that challenges on the eastern border exist the same as challenges on the western border that we currently treat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to understand the bill, so in the bill there is no provision that says that the city, the city itself must reduce some of their tax intake as well as corresponding to the, asking the state to reduce their tax intake. The other thing I have on the bill that I couldn't find, and maybe you can help me with, does the tax breaks that we're looking at here only affect existing businesses? Is this a bill to keep businesses in Taylor's Falls, or can this bill also be used to provide tax break incentives to get new businesses to move into Taylor's Falls?
Representative Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I know Representative Emery likes my one-word answers, so Representative Biskins, both.
Thank you. So then a final question, Representative Kalin. I know that Taylor's Falls is not the only community you represent. What would prevent another community that you represent from losing a business to Taylor's Falls because in making said move, they now get a tax break?
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, as we've talked about, the real competition is really from the folks across the river, and I think that that's the real threat rather than dealing with the hypothetical. I think that Mr. Eng does a phenomenal job of dealing with the countywide perspective here, and I think he knows that I give him some pushback to make sure we're doing the right thing statewide. And so I'm much more concerned about the hundreds of jobs we've seen go across the river and the tax revenue than the possibility of that competition. I just don't see it happening. We work really well together, all of our communities, in partnership. And actually, Mr. Chair, Taylor's Falls and then the border, the next city over, the city of Schaefer, have engaged in cooperative long-term planning about the growth of the community. So I just don't see that happening. We have a real cooperative spirit in Chicago County.
Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm inclined to support this and move it on to tax committee, but I share the concerns. I myself have worked for over 20 years in economic development, and I think it's a little disingenuous, frankly, to say that businesses have never told you that taxes were the reason they might relocate. It clearly is, in fact, by the testimony from Representative Kalin, and I share the concern about doing this in a spot way. Our tax climate and business climate in Minnesota needs to be improved overall. Doing this piecemeal tends to be kind of a band-aid approach to a bigger problem, and hopefully the session will get about that too, but I'm inclined to support moving this on to the tax committee.
Members, we have two more individuals to testify. We don't have two more individuals.
I believe they're both just available to answer
right,
questions.
We don't.
They need.
If there's any further discussion, since this bill was already heard in the division and it's being referred to tax. Seeing none, then Representative Kalin renews his motion that House File 101 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the tax committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Bill is on its way.
Thank you.
Members, the next bill on the agenda is House File 111, Representative Winkler. Representative Winkler, in your motion on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 111 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register with one, I guess, understanding, which is that the Pension Commission will have a chance to review this bill before any action is taken on the floor of the Senate or the House.
Representative Winkler, could you tell the committee if there is an agreement on the Senate side also to that effect?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that Senator Bonoff, the Senate author, has agreed with Senator Rest and others who helped move the bill forward that it will visit the Pension Commission.
All right. Then Representative Winkler, to your bill.
And Mr. Chair, I do have a committee council amendment, I would say, more than my amendment. It's the A1 in your packet. It should just be a technical change. And maybe Mr. Shepard, I think it's just a correction of a reference.
Mr. Shepard, would you explain the A1 amendment, please?
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 amendment is just a technical amendment to refer to a correct clause in the bill as a cross-reference.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, then you want to move the A1 amendment?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Winkler, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill essentially is a divestment bill for the State Board of Investment from foreign companies who are currently doing business in Iran's energy sector. We'll have brief testimony from an expert on Iran's activities, but very briefly, Iran is one of four nations that is on the United States and EU list of sponsors of terrorism. And as probably we all know, Iran is not just engaged in funding terrorist groups around the world, it is also seeking to acquire nuclear weapons and be a nuclear terrorist state. Currently, under federal law, U.S. companies are prohibited from engaging in this kind of business, so this bill only affects those foreign companies that are currently engaged in that trade. And I think just the larger point is that this is part of a movement in several states. I think 11 have already passed the bill, and it's pending in 20 other states. It's consistent with a bill offered in the U.S. Senate by then-Senator Obama, and is really an economic tool to, I think, improve security and peace. So the provisions quickly are first referring to Section 1, Subdivision 2, with respect to the burden placed on the State Board of Investment. Subsection 1 under Subdivision 2 does state that the State Board of Investment can rely on publicly available information about companies that meet this definition. So the level of burden placed on them is fairly light. Subdivision 4 under Section 1 states that the State Board of Investment has 9 months to divest itself of 50% of the assets in question and has a total of 15 months to completely divest itself. Turning to Subdivision 6, we clarify that this is subject to federal law on this issue. This is not the state of Minnesota trying to usurp the federal prerogative to make foreign policy, but it must be consistent with it. Subdivision 7 clarifies that the requirement that the State Board of Investment take this action must be consistent with their fiduciary responsibilities of the board, so we're not asking them to take some irresponsible action. Subdivision 7, subpart D, lists the types of activity or investments that do not fall subject to this divestment requirement, including supplying goods or services intended to relieve human suffering, investments in a company primarily engaged in promoting health, education, journalistic, religious, or welfare activities, and investments in a U.S. company that is authorized by the federal government to have business activities in Iran. Subdivision 8 excludes certain securities from this divestment requirement, including essentially mutual funds. I know many of the smaller pension funds probably don't have direct holdings in Lukoil or Gazprom, but those companies may be part of a larger fund that's actively managed by someone else. This doesn't require them or anybody else to debt us from mutual funds where the securities are included. Finally, Subdivision 10, in the event that Iran is removed from the State Department's list of state sponsors of terrorism, or if the President of the United States, presumably through the Secretary of State, certifies that state legislation similar to this interferes with the conduct of our foreign policy, these provisions also would be preempted. That is the basics of it, Mr. Chair. I do have Professor John Radson, who will give...
Members, before questions, I think it would be a good idea to hear from the two testifiers. There is some discussion about the impact of this bill, both on a political level and on a fiduciary level. There is a great deal of discussion. So, please, Radson. And welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am John Radson. I teach at William Mitchell College of Law. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all about the threat that Iran poses to our security and to the security of our friends in the region. I'll summarize my background in a minute or so and then speak more directly to the threat that Iran poses. I was a federal prosecutor for 6 years. After that, I was the Assistant General Counsel at the Central Intelligence Agency for 2 years. I then came to William Mitchell, where I also run the National Security Forum. Before 9/11, I managed the Iran Commercial Initiative at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This was at a different time in our relationship with Iran. It was a more hopeful time for a breakthrough in our relations. What we did there is promote commercial ties between American executives and the Iranian private sector to the extent that there was one, and we worked against some of the economic impediments. I also consulted with various groups, Search for Common Ground, the American-Iranian Council, the Eurasia Group, that were trying to promote better ties between the two countries. as I say, that was at a time before September 11 where we thought with a different president, President Qasemi, that there might be some improvement in U.S.-Iran relations. But where do we stand today in terms of our relationship with Iran? Iran, as representative said, pursues nuclear energy, and for many in the intelligence community in the United States and around the world, they believe that Iran continues to pursue a nuclear program. And Iran's possession of nuclear weapons would be very destabilizing to the region. It would be a threat to our activities, a threat to our allies, including Arab regimes in the region, and including our strong ally Israel. The next threat that's been alluded to is Iran's support for terrorism. Iran has the dubious honor of being one of four countries that our State Department lists as a state sponsor of terrorism. We also do not have diplomatic relations with Iran. Those relations were broken off after the hostage crisis in the late 70s into the early 80s. Iran supports groups under this category of terrorism, groups such as Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad. Iran is one of the most active supporters to those groups that are causing trouble in the region. Related to that, Iran is an impediment to any chance of peace between Israelis and Palestinians. The Islamic Republic of Iran has taken the most radical line, a rejectionist view of any possibility of peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. They're the fuel on the fire. They're not the only cause for a lack of an agreement, but they are a big impediment to peace there. The next obstruction, if we remember Iran's geography, they're causing problems for our activities on each side of their country. They're causing us trouble in Afghanistan, and they're also causing us trouble in Iraq. And the Iraq difficulties have been more publicized. We believe, and we've had testimony from various officials from the prior administration, that Iran supports insurgents in Iraq. Iran is involved in producing many of the sophisticated explosive devices that are used to kill our soldiers that are fighting there. Iran is a problem in Iraq, as it is a problem in Afghanistan. I don't know that there's much debate, so I won't belabor this point, but if there are any questions about any of these various areas, I'm glad to go back to them. Nuclear weapons, terrorism, obstructing the peace process, causing problems in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'll just say,
Professor Essing, if you could, to the bill, exactly how the bill would alleviate any of these concerns or problems. Why is the bill before us in reference to what you've just told us?
Sure, and I don't claim, and I know the sponsors don't claim, that this is going to, in a day, change the behavior of Iran. I don't think anyone is that naive. But what we believe is that through these kind of measures, a cumulative effect will change the cost-benefit of the Islamic Republic. They are a rational regime. I've been on record. I don't think we're ready for military action, but I don't think diplomacy enough will solve the problem. And Senator Obama, before he became president, put forward this idea that certain carrots and sticks will have an effect in changing the behavior of that regime. So what makes sense to me is that this then fits into the current policies toward Iran. It is an intermediate option, and it is something concrete, that if we have other states and we add this up, it will cause some effect on Iran. And I'll draw a parallel to answer the question. One of the areas where we saw pain that we inflicted in changing Iran's behavior was convincing foreign banks to not extend credit, to not open up letters of credit. And this is something, and we can take it just from the Iranians or the business sector, that they were complaining about. And if we have this cumulative effect of companies that are prevented or restricted or change their mind about investing in Iran, this will also have an effect.
Members, questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Representative Winkler.
Right.
Question I have is, I sit on the pension board, and have you talked with anyone from the State Bureau of Investments about what percentage of our funds we have that this would affect, either percentage-wise or dollar amounts?
Winkler, before you answer that question, the next person up is from the State Board of Investment. And I think what you're going to get, Representative Nelson, is the reaction to the impact of this bill in some detail, because they've taken a look at it. So I think rather than have Representative Winkler answer the question, let's wait for the state board to come up and give us a rundown of it, unless Representative Winkler wishes to answer it.
Well, I can give a very brief answer, which is that these holdings represent less than 1%, about 0.9% of the total state investment portfolio, and I think it's about 6% of the total foreign asset investment pool.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, and either Representative Winkler or the your witness, we did have we've done this a couple of times in the past. We've done it, I think, in Ireland, and we've also done it in South Africa. I think I'm not sure what the effect on situation in Ireland was, but I do think that it was considered that the issue, joint issue of divestment and lack of exchanges with South Africa was considered to have a big effect on the regime change there. Is there evidence to that, or is that just a rumor?
Representative Winkler, you want to respond to that one?
Mr. Chair, I think it's more than a rumor, but I don't have evidence.
All right. Members, why don't we get the board? Professor, do you wish to respond to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think it's true. I don't know about the Irish situation. There has been evidence that divestment was successful in changing the behavior of the South African regime. And another example that I know, but I think perhaps you had divestment of Sudan, is that that is another area where we've seen results in changing the behavior. But these are exceptions. There are very few countries that behave so poorly that they'll be state sponsors, that we don't have diplomatic relations. We're talking about a very limited number of countries that would be candidates, in my view, for divestment.
Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Winkler, you mentioned four countries, other countries, or perhaps countries including Iran. Why aren't we including them?
Representative Winkler. Well, I could, Mr. Chair, Representative Gutwell, first of all, I think we want to be targeted in what we're doing, and this is consistent with federal law already. So we're not trying to move beyond what the federal government is already engaged in. We're trying to basically be a support of the U.S. foreign policy in doing this.
Members, I'm going to bring up the Board of Investment, and Professor, if you want to stay there, because questions may go back and forth, but if the Board of Investment would come up and do their presentation now, that would maybe answer some of the potential questions members have and give you an idea that this one, we've done the divestment before. The board has some comparisons as to the relative size of previous bills of this nature compared to the bill that's before us today. Well, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Howard Vicker. I'm the director of the State Investment Board. Excuse me. First of all, as to the bill, the State Board of Investment has not taken a formal position on this bill, so what I'm going to do today is just give you some what I believe are factual data as it relates to this. First of all, Representative Wilson was correct. This would affect about 6% of our international portfolio, slightly over 1% of our entire portfolio. It would affect about two-thirds of our international integrated oils. The dollar amount is approximately $280 million as of year end. So, it does have some pretty significant effects as it relates to our international portfolio. The board, as to some of the discussion that has taken place historically, as far as South Africa, there was never any South Africa divestiture legislation passed. There was some initiations done by the State Board of Investment. It was not done legislatively. There is Northern Ireland, which was passed, and that was a shareholder resolution initiative. In other words, we at the board initiate shareholder resolutions related to the companies involved in Northern Ireland, as described in the legislation, and that has been effective. A lot of people, including myself, would also suggest if you really want to be effective and initiate change with a company, to do it through shareholder resolutions instead of a one-time, one-day in the newspaper selling stuff. You can initiate shareholder resolutions and become a problem for a company. A company doesn't care if you sell their stock one day. They care if you're initiating shareholder resolutions and are there on an ongoing basis. As far as the Sudan legislation, which was passed 2 years ago, that has been implemented. That has had some effect, but the entire divestiture of that was approximately $24 million versus $280 million, again, as of year end. There are various trading studies done as it relates to the cost of implementing a trading package such as this. Commissions are a small part of trading. Most of the costs are market impact. It's estimated that a round-trip trade for $280 million would be approximately 1%, so you're looking at a cost of between $2 and $3 million if we were to liquidate the $280 million of securities that we have and repurchase those. In addition to this, we will have some problems, and I think it's pretty obvious, to implement some of our current international strategies, especially the indexation of securities. The State Board has indexed a significant part of our portfolio on an ongoing basis. This will obviously cause us tracking errors because we won't be able to buy stocks that are in the index. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's kind of a factual presentation as it relates to the board, and I'm glad to respond to any questions.
Mr. Ricker, you said the board has taken no formal position on the bill.
Has
the governor taken a position on the bill?
Excuse me?
Has the governor taken a position on the bill? Should the bill come to his desk, will he sign?
To my knowledge, he is awaiting to see what form this comes before he'll take a formal position one way or another.
Would it make a difference if it came in the current form or in the form that you just described to us as a resolution from the shareholders?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm really not in a position to speak for the governor.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, two questions. One, the first one would be, could one just add a shareholder resolution provision to the bill to, you know, maybe in a phased way of doing it, because it doesn't require immediate divestiture anyway. So could that be added in some way? And then the next thing is to Mr. Bicker, how has the international portfolio as a whole done with the rest of the portfolio in the past 10 years, the past 5 years, and the past year?
Mr. Bicker, to both questions.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, as far as shareholder resolutions go, shareholder resolutions come up annually, okay, because there's annual meetings. I don't know when the annual dates are for any of these meetings. We may have just missed some. So if you're looking at doing that, you know, it could be a year before we could even initiate something. So a timing on a shareholder resolution, if you wanted to do that plus the divestiture, you'd have to move the divestiture back probably quite a bit. As far as the results of international investments versus domestic investments, in the last 6 months, international investments have underperformed domestic. In the 3 years before that, international significantly outperformed domestic. And for the most part, that was due to the euro. I mean, the euro has been very, very strong until about 6 months ago. The euro went from 120 to 160. Now the euro is back to 129. So it's been a currency play. In local markets, the local markets in Europe and the local markets here in their own currency have been relatively flat.
Representative,
can I ask over 5 years and over 10 years?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, over 5 years, I believe international's outperformed. I think over 10 years are pretty flat.
Representative Merrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bicker, does it take legislative action to present a shareholder resolution?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, no.
Representative Merrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bicker, has a shareholder resolution option regarding Iran been discussed?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it's just been discussed here and discussed with other people. I've discussed it with some of the individuals who, as I understand it, are behind this legislation and suggest that as an alternative to them.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bicker, you indicated, I think correctly, that the complexity of dealing with indexes where these companies are held as in terms of prospective purchases. But I believe that if we're joining the 20-some other states that have current or pending legislation of divestiture, that seems like actually that's a case to be made for a broader impact for our bill, that we can actually influence the behavior of these indexes and go well beyond the $230 million, but you know, into the billions and billions in terms of divestiture voluntarily, that these indexes, I mean, this is our opportunity to actually affect the financial markets in a much broader and more positive way. I would ask Representative Winkler or probably Mr. Professor Radson, for Professor Radson, I'd ask him whether Duke or North Carolina is more likely to advance far in the NCAA tournament this year, but more to the point, the issue of timing. California and Florida, I believe, passed their divestiture bills for Sudan and Iran at the same time. I felt like Sudan that we passed, I think, was it last year, 2 years ago, that we were well aware of the atrocities in Sudan and the genocide, and it just only started to recognize, the Bush administration only started to recognize the genocide and call it that. But we were divesting sort of after the atrocities had occurred, the momentum, we were a little bit late in that. Can you speak maybe to the advantage of doing, of acting today on Iran when we know that there are problems and know that there are intimidation and threats around the world, and maybe acting before it's too late?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think Professor Radson is actually Representative Kalin's professor, and he may be better at answering his questions than I am.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Professor Radson, be careful where you're going now.
It's a pleasure to answer questions once again for our representative. I agree with the premise that in Sudan we had something that was quite obvious that could make the news as a problem by that regime. And I don't follow the details here, but if the legislation passed, then it may be, after those atrocities, it may have been seen as a reaction. In Iran, we don't have anything obvious. We don't have genocide going on there, but we have a collection of problems, and these problems have gone on for years. For people of my generation, we remember the problems starting with a revolution and then our hostages being held for 444 days. We've had terrorist attacks in the region where Iran has been considered to be the sponsor. Louis Free, our former FBI director, believes that the Khobar Towers bombing was ordered by the Iranians, Iranian intelligence. That took out a lot of our people in Saudi Arabia. So some people may say that this bill even reacts too late to all these events. Iran, I remind the committee, has been a state sponsor of terrorism, listed on the State Department list since 1984. The people that we follow, the ups and downs, we've been hoping for improvement, hoping for a breakthrough. I think the situation is going to get worse. The regime seems to be more repressive, and if you're looking for an opportunity to make a message to say that this is enough, we don't like your behavior, your pursuit of nuclear weapons, your support for terrorism, the violation of human rights of your own people in the country. We don't have genocide, but we have violations of human rights. If you're looking to send that message, then this is concrete. It's not going to change their behavior overnight, but this message, along with others, may have an effect in changing their decision-making.
Representative Hornstein's next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this will be a question for Mr. Bicker. Mr. Chair, Mr. Bicker, you mentioned the transaction fees, and I'm interested to know, you know, within this large portfolio that the board has, I guess, in excess of $50 billion, how much buying and selling do you do in a year, and fees that you incur overall in a typical year for
Mr. Bicker
transactions?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, the reality is obviously you're trading every day. What this would be some trading that probably would not take place because a fair amount of this is already in the index fund. Index funds trade very little. And we would have to take these out. So this would be additional trade. So the idea that just because we normally trade, we would normally sell these stocks, Is not true in this case.
Representative Hornsby.
Mr. Chairman, Speaker, just in terms of just whether you know this would be a normal trade or not, how much does the board incur in trading fees on an annual basis?
Mr. Bicker.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, there are basically two fees, two costs in trading a stock. One is commissions, which are a very small part of a trade, and the rest is what's known as market impact. Every time you're trading, you're moving the market slightly. And we have trading studies done on this. The reality is a one-way trade on the international markets, as at least estimated by the various organizations we use, are somewhere around 40 to 45 basis points in total. So that's one way. In other words, you got to sell, then you got to buy. So in aggregate, if you're looking at somewhere around 85 to 90 basis points in a total cost of a trade to buy and sell a security. Now the reality is again, commissions are probably 20% of that. The rest of it's market impact.
Representative Hornstein.
I'll have to get the answer in another time and place because I still don't understand exactly how much we incur in fees on a typical year. That was really my question.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, our commissions for last fiscal year were approximately $23 million. Okay? Total impact was higher than that in costs that we incurred. The exact cost you incur is really not totally quantifiable, but we have services that do it because we want to see how our managers are trading.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bicker, I have a question for you. Does the current volatility of the market have an impact on the concern the board has with making these types of decisions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the markets today are the most unusual markets we've ever seen. And, you take the energy sector. The energy sector, until a year ago, was the hottest sector around. I mean, these companies were making huge amounts of money, and their stocks were very strong. Obviously, that has changed. Oil has gone from 140 to 40. Now, where is oil going to be a year from now? I don't know. But if the economy does get better, and God willing, I hope it does, oil is not going to go down.
All right. Further discussion, members. All right. I'm going to ask one more because we have members who weren't here. Representative Winkler, would you explain to the committee again what's going to happen to this bill once it gets to the floor so everyone understands?
Mr. Chair, the bill would be sent to the General Register, but before we would take action on the bill on the House floor, we will have a hearing and a chance for the Pension Commission to weigh in on the pension and investment-related questions to this bill.
And Representative Winkler, you clarified also that that's the agreement in the Senate.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Bicker, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
And Professor, I really appreciate your testimony in regards to Iran. You are certainly a very knowledgeable person. We really appreciate that. And I think in regards to setting foreign policy, those kinds of inputs are very valuable and very important. But having served on the State Board of Investments for 8 years, the fiduciary responsibility is first and foremost amongst the board, and that our retirees have taken a big hit, and we as a state have taken a big hit in our pension fund already. We have commitments to those retirees. They have expectations. We have responsibilities, and if this fund isn't as strong as it can be, we in the State General Fund will also, it will fall to us to make up that difference. And right now, we're not in very good shape to be thinking that we would do that and putting our retirees at risk. And so, matter of fact, it's so important that state law requires that. And I know, Mr. Bicker, you probably have that framed in large print on your desk. And certainly something very responsible. So the idea was that we really try and avoid, and matter of fact, are required by state law to politicize the actions of the State Board of Investments, that the only responsibility is to do what's best by our retirees. And when you look at an amount of $280 million and where else are you going to buy and the potential recovery that we want to certainly be positioned to take advantage of, it seems to me that the shareholder resolutions can have much the same impact, and that I would be wondering if Representative Winkler and Representative Kahn have seen some interest on your part, if we might want to consider making this more in line. We want to certainly have that impact that you're trying to have here and that Professor spoke so well to, but we also have this requirement. Could you speak to that issue of resolutions? I know there's a timing issue, but this is important timing as well as our retirees and what we do with them. The effect of a resolution as compared to divestiture.
Representative Kiffmeyer, is that to Representative Winkler?
Either to Representative Winkler or to Mr. Bicker.
Well, my preference would be first to have Representative Winkler answer the question about such an amendment. And then I think Mr. Rick has already discussed his opinion on the difference between the two. But Representative Winkler, to such an amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think that an amendment could be added that would require the State Board of Investment to offer such a shareholder resolution to the extent that it's feasible to do so within the divestment time frame outlined in the bill. Under the current version of the bill, there's 90 days that the State Board of Investment has to identify the companies that would be on this list. After that point, they then have 9 months to divest 50%, so that you therefore have a year to do that before anything would have to be out. And then there's the total is 15 months after the 90 days pass, so that's a total of 18 months for 100%. So there probably would be time, depending on timelines of annual meetings and so on, to offer these resolutions. And if it was, I don't think the chair and I don't think that I would like to offer an amendment on the fly to do that in the committee without having a chance to work on it. But I think that could be an additional component added to this. And this is, I guess, a bit not based on in-depth knowledge, but I guess I'm a skeptic that Gazprom, Lukoil, and China Petroleum and Chemical Corporation are going to take too seriously the resolutions of American pension funds in their in shareholder meetings. I think that the point is not so much that we're going to be able to change the world with this resolution, but that we need to be part of the umbrella of American foreign policy with respect to Iran and our economic follow-through on that policy.
Mr. Bicker, did you have a comment to make?
Mr. Chairman, and as it relates to shareholder resolutions, if you're going to, first of all, the bill as it currently is written, asks us to engage these companies and to attempt to change their focus. I would think that we should follow through on that piece before you initiate shareholder resolutions, because they're not going to talk to you if you're trying to do both. So, and believe me, I've already been in conversation with some of the other funds, big funds, who have passed this legislation. At least to my knowledge, they have not divested yet. They're in the talking to stage with some of these companies. And they said there has been some progress made. And they are very seriously contemplating looking at doing some shareholder resolutions themselves. And if we all, or a number of us, banded together and initiated some shareholder resolutions, I believe there's a possibility we could be effective. I think personally, again, this is just my opinion, I think you've got to be at least as effective with a shareholder resolution as you are one day selling stock. Once you sell a stock company, you don't care who you are. You're gone. Your influence is gone that day. Period. You no longer have any influence with that company. All you've done is incurred costs, incurred tracking error, and reduce the flexibility for us to invest in money. Now, again, that's my opinion. Don't hold that to the board. But if you initiate shareholder resolutions, you do it with some other companies, you maintain the investment flexibility, and you actually might affect some change.
Representative Biskins, I believe you are next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is to you, Mr. Chair. I know you're, I believe I have come to understand your aversion to writing major legislation on the House floor. Would it be, And so I am a little curious about the motion before us. You know, with all due respect to the powdered wigs over in the Senate, Mr. Chair, would it be your intention that if there is a major amendment to this bill presented on the House floor, that you would recall the bill back to committee to allow for public testimony here in the House on said amendment?
Representative Biskins, I don't like to deal on hypotheticals either, but should such a situation come up, that would be my preference.
And Mr. Chair, I would just add that the bill in the Senate is sitting in the Senate. I don't even know if they call it a general register or what procedural term they have for it, but essentially it's in the same place in the Senate. So there isn't going to be further committee action in the Senate either.
Representative Biskins, I think we had a discussion in my office with the Board of Investment on this issue at some length, and and with Senator Ress's office also. Because of the volatility of the market and because of the size of this divestiture, that I think it is exceedingly prudent to go to the Pension Commission and have them analyze what this does. You can talk about percentages, but right now, 1% in our budget, 1% in the pension, that's a pretty sizable chunk. So I think that discussion has to take place in the Pension Commission before. And I think Representative Simon was next. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Kiffmeyer that we shouldn't politicize the State Board of Investment. It's true that their duty is a fiduciary duty to maximize the returns. Absolutely. That's what they're supposed to do. But that's not necessarily what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to weigh and we're supposed to balance. And although we shouldn't be inflicting upon the State Board of Investment every foreign policy fad or trend, and we shouldn't expect them to take action with respect to every regime we don't like or who annoys us, I think in very rare cases, it is our job as a legislature to step in. And in my opinion, this is one of those cases. I was involved with the Darfur bill a couple years ago, too. And I think the cases should be very, very rare and very few where we do get involved. But this is not a regime that just annoys us. It's a regime that threatens us. This isn't a regime whose practices we don't like, or whose human rights practices we frown upon. If that were the case, I would agree that we shouldn't politicize these kinds of things because our discussions would be endless about regimes around the world that we don't like. But this is a regime that threatens us and whose leaders, many of them, want to kill us. And so I understand that Mr. Bicker, I understand that this divestiture would cause some heartburn and annoyance for him and his staff. And he's doing his job, and he does it well, in trying to maximize the return of his investment. That's his job. It's not always our job. And so I think this is one of those very rare and limited instances where something like this is appropriate. And I hope we do pass it along.
Members, I believe we have Representative Cotton, you're on the Pension Commission.
Yes.
Is that correct? Representative Nelson, you're on it. We have two members who are on the Pension Commission from the committee. Representative Cotton.
Also point out that I believe the Senate author of the bill, is that not Senator Pappas?
No.
Oh,
Representative Winkler, no it isn't. It's
okay.
Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Chair, it's Senator Bonoff.
Okay.
So
I think Senator Pappas is possibly a co-author. I mean, she's associated with the bill and she's also a new Senate member of the Pension Commission.
So no. Members, we do have representation from this committee on the Pension Commission to review it.
Mr. Senator. The usual path of pension bills is that they go to the Pension Commission and then they come back to, then they come to the Government Operations Commission and depending on their financial impact to the State Government Finance Committee. But it seems to me I intend to vote to pass the bill on today. It seems to me the discussion in the Pension Commission on the investment issue is clearly appropriate, and my guess would be that if the Pension Commission suggested a significant amendment or suggested that the bill not proceed, I imagine that you wouldn't have to withdraw the bill. I imagine Representative Winkler would probably make a motion as the author of the bill to move it on. And I just want to point out that if you remember Representative Mr. Bicker's answer to mine is that the whole international portfolio is now trailing the American portfolio. So it's not clear that that's a good investment for us anyway. And I will also point out, I don't know what year it was, there was at least one year where the Minneapolis firefighters were the highest pension of all the bigger pension funds, specifically because they refused to do international investments at the time when that was the big thrust and everyone was jumping into international events, investments, which were then rapidly sinking. And as far as Representative Kiffmeyer's speech, I wondered if she would have felt as comfortable making that speech in 1937 if we were talking about divestment in Siemens or Volkswagen or any one of those companies. It's a rhetorical question as support for people as to what our policy should be towards fiduciary investments as opposed to any moral issues.
Mr. Bicker, you were shaking your head there for a second. Do you wish to correct anything Reverend Khan has said?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would respond to Representative Khan is that the international components in these portfolios have been very, very strong in a number of years.
Representative Horn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to amplify Representative Simon's really good point, and I strongly support this legislation. There was an Iran Sanctions Enabling Act passed at the federal level, and I believe, and I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong on this, but I believe that every member of Congress in the state of Minnesota, you know, across the political spectrum, voted in favor of that. And this is something that other states are doing, and we're doing it in partnership with Congress. And I think because there's such unanimity of opinion on this, which is very rare, I think, in a situation where we have divestment and an issue with a foreign country, that I think this should be passed, and it'll get discussed again at the Pension Commission. But this is solid legislation, and we are really dealing with a regime that is very different from others that we've had to address. So I want to thank Representative Winkle for bringing this forward and hope that we'll have unanimous support on the committee for it. All right.
We'll go back to Representative Winkle.
Mr. Chair, I urge that the discussion be wrapped up and that we move to vote, and I urge your affirmative vote.
Representative Winkler, why don't you renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I would renew that House File 111 be recommended to pass to the General, be sent to the General Register, and with the understanding that it will be heard in the Pension Commission meanwhile.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Okay. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Members, we're going to have a meeting next week, Thursday for sure, on Representative Emmer's voter ID bill. Please watch your calendars for Wednesday and Tuesday. There is no meeting tomorrow. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, members.